Well, good morning, everyone. It's wonderful to see you all. Good morning. Oh, well, thank you. It's funny, in my work as a priest, I get to meet lots of people, many of whom are very pleased to tell me that they don't believe in God. To which I always reply, that's fine, because God believes in you. And usually they look pretty surprised at hearing that. Why should someone who I don't know, who I'd really never given much thought or attention to, believe in me? What I find is that most people don't believe in God simply because they can't see God. It's like everything that's in front of them just gets in the way. All the places they've been, all the people who are around them, all the pride that they have inside just shouts, fills their ears with, God's not here, folks. Move along. Ain't nothing to see. And so they keep walking along in life, feeling a strange absence or a hole, but not knowing where to go or where to turn. I find, quite ironically, that many Christians aren't that different. We can get so busy with church, can't we? We can get so busy saying all the right stuff, doing all the right stuff, juggling all those bits of paper that we can struggle to see Jesus in all that we do. But I think if we're prepared to let our bubbles be punctured by God, well, we might just be a bit surprised at what we can see. Just let me explain. We can go through places in life where it seems that God is just absent. Whether it's sitting down in a doctor's office waiting for the diagnosis, whether it's showing up and we're standing in front of a magistrate, whether it's hearing from a divorce lawyer, or dare I say it, having another meeting of parish council. It can seem like God is anywhere but here. And I'm sure that Joseph's brothers felt the same way. Let's rewind the story a little, just so we get the full picture. There they were, God's chosen people, living in the land that God had given their grandfather Abraham. And yet they faced a horrible choice. A persistent drought meant they were now in danger of starvation. I wonder if they asked themselves, what would we do? So they head off to Egypt to buy grain, and they come before Pharaoh's most important official, the prime minister. And what does he do? He accuses them of being spies. I mean, God, where are you in all of this? He's not simply the Pharaoh's right-hand man. He is Pharaoh's enforcer. So what does he do? He snatches one of the brothers as a hostage. And what's worse, he demands that they return with their father's most cherished son, Benjamin. Can you imagine what they might have thought? God, are you on our side? What's going on? And then, on the way home, they discover, much to their horror, that the money they had paid for the grain is now sitting in their bags. Would they be accused of being thieves as well? So they head home. They pick up Benjamin. They head back to Egypt to try and sort out this whole big mess that they're in. Everything looks okay. They head off, only to discover that a cup is in Benjamin's possessions. No ordinary cup. This is the enforcer's cup. God, how could you let this happen? And so when we meet them in our reading this morning, they find themselves standing in a place where God just seems to be absent. They are standing in a place where everything that could go wrong is going wrong. What they couldn't see was that the enforcer in front of them was their brother, Joseph. If you remember, the last time they saw Joey, their little brother, they'd thrown him in a hole. If you remember, he was such a snotty little brat. They just wanted to get rid of him. Right? So they throw him a hole and they do what all good brothers do. They sold him to a bunch of slavers heading to Egypt. And then they lied to their father about it. Remember that? And so they are standing in front of Pharaoh's enforcer, who is surrounded by all these courtiers in a magnificent palace filled with idols and filled with priests and filled with false gods. Can you imagine how they would have felt? In this dark place of despair and desperation, Joseph reveals himself. And does he give them a good thrashing? Does he throw them into prison? No, he looks back over everything that's happened and he sees God's fingerprints at work. God sent me ahead of you to save your lives, he tells his brothers. And God punctures their bubble. Where the brothers had done evil and acted out of spitefulness and resentment, God had the last word. Joseph embraces his brothers, and all that is wrong is put right. Despite their worst intentions, God makes something good out of something horrible. It wasn't you who sent me here, Joseph says. But God has made me Lord over all of Egypt so that you can escape the drought and famine that's coming. Too often when we find ourselves in a dark place, we let our fears and our worries take over, don't we? We can find our anger and our resentment just seems to grow and breed, and the darkness just seems to get darker. We get frustrated, we lash out. But no matter how dark that situation is, Joseph reminds us that God is at work. New things can happen. God has the last word. But it's not only places and dark places where we can struggle to see God. We can struggle to see God in people. In those who are around us. We can struggle especially to see God at work in our own lives. The truth is, most people struggle to see God in the person of Jesus. Think of the Pharisees and the authorities. All they saw when they looked at Jesus was someone who was trouble. Someone who played fast and loose with all the rules and regulations that they cherished. I wonder what the disciples saw when they looked at Jesus. Maybe they saw someone who could help them out, someone who could make Israel great again, or maybe just someone who could teach these Canaanites a lesson or two. I wonder what those Canaanites thought when they looked at Jesus. It's like, oh gosh, here's another rabbi coming in to tell us where we'd just gone wrong. But yet, this is the space where he meets a woman with no name. We don't know who she is. She calls out to Jesus. She's not timid. Her call's not half-hearted. It's not a, well, excuse me, sir, I'd just like to have a few minutes. No, she's bellowing at him. It's heartfelt. Lord, Son of David, have mercy. We shouldn't skip over this call too quickly. We need to remember that Matthew's gospel began with the evangelist telling us that Jesus is the Son of David. He's the one who's going to save all of God's people once and for all. And as Matthew's gospel goes on, and here we are in chapter 16, we've met loads and loads of people, all of whom call Jesus different things. We shouldn't forget that the only people who call Jesus the Son of David, the only people who see him for who he is, are two blind people in chapter 9 and 20, and this woman. From the outside, she's the wrong person. If anyone should not be able to see God, it is her. She's a Canaanite of all things. These are people who hated and fought with God's people for over 1,000 years. From the inside, she's the wrong person. Her daughter is possessed by a demon. I mean, what kind of mother lets that happen? As if she wanted it to happen. Can you imagine what her neighbours must have been saying about her? And what kind of mother she was? Why would God have a bar to do with this person? And of course, true to form, men kind of using half the brain that they might regularly use, they behave in the most horrible way. They want her to shut up. They want her to send her away. They tell Jesus, kind of, can you just get rid of her? But this woman, this pushy, this sassy, this, I'm not going to take no for an answer from you bunch of guys. This woman can see something that nobody else can. She pleads with Jesus. And Jesus' words are puzzling. I was only sent to the lost sheep of Israel. I mean, what kind of answer is that? Is Jesus talking to her? Or is he thinking out loud? Don't miss the irony here. Jesus is in a land far, far away from the lost sheep of Israel. He's among people who are about as far away from God as they can be. He is talking to a woman who is about as far away from them as what you can get. And yet, she is the only person he meets who sees him for who he is, the Son of David. This unnamed woman, she is persistent enough to step out of her bubble. She steps over centuries of ethnic animosity and religious bigotry, and she blows past these disciples who stand in her way. She's not even going to be deterred by Jesus' prevarication. She's not doing this for herself. She's not doing it to look good. She's doing this for her little girl, who needs it, who needs the kind of blessing that Abraham, that Isaac, that Jacob wrestled with. And Jesus recognizes in her that faith that he has not seen in all of Israel. It's the kind of faith that makes the heart pure. It's the kind of faith that changes someone from the inside out. It's a kind of faith that God loves, and her daughter is restored. The point of the story is not that we contrast ourselves with this woman. If we do that, that's the route for disappointment and shame. The point is that we see the similarities, no matter how small. Do we turn to Jesus when we need help? Or do we let others put us off? Do we persist? Or do we just give up? Are we prepared to give God a go when everything else has failed? Or do we just keep traveling along in the same old rut? That's the choice. This brings us to the third thing that gets in the way of us seeing God. And that's pride. Pride stands in all our way, and especially for religious people. You see, for the Apostle Paul, pride was the problem that he saw in Israel. They were filled with pride because of their heritage, because they knew how God worked. They had all the rules and they knew how to keep them. They believed that God owed them a special deal. And it's the same story we hear today, isn't it? It's the same story we hear from Christians time and time again, that our church is better than anybody else's, that our theology is righter than anybody else's, that our lives are purer and holier than anybody else's. And it's pride that's never more apparent when religious people sprout their religious views in public and they are completely indifferent to the damage it does to people and their families. Because pride is grounded in a sense of privilege. And so Paul pops that bubble. Make no mistake, God's got no time for pride. God's got no time for our own sense of entitlement. God is perfectly prepared to graft the most unlikely people into his family. People a lot like wild olive branches. Now, don't let Paul's lengthy words get lost on you. Don't lose the punchiness here. In the ancient world, any good olive grower worth his salt knew that wild olives, well, they were just the worst. They were small, they were woody, they were tasteless. You'd only get a few on a big tree. That's why the whole world cultivated olives. You'd get big, fat, juicy, luscious, plentiful olives on a cultivated tree. The last thing you would do would be to put wild branches onto a cultivated root. But that is exactly what God does. God throws out the rules. God says, if anyone wants me, if anyone's looking for me, they are in the family, rules or no rules. They are the rules. It can be hard to see God in our lives. It can be hard to see him because of all the things that get in the way, all the places we go to, all the people who surround us, and most of all, because of the pride that grows within. But here's the thing. Do you think that Jesus went to Sidon and Tyre because he had nothing better to do? Do you think he went there to see his weekender, taking a few waves by the beach? No, I think he went there because he had someone to meet. He went there to see someone unexpected. And God does that with us. He finds us. He grafts us into his family. It may not feel like it most days. It may not look like it most days. But before you ever went looking for God, Jesus was looking for you. So don't be afraid to open up to God. And whatever you do, don't let others get in the way. Just open up your heart, open up your life, and take a leaf out of this persistent woman's book. Don't give up. Press on, press in. And the healing and the restoration that you long for will happen so much sooner than you can ask or imagine. Amen.